everybody, Cal Banyan here, Cal Banyan's Hypnosis, etc. If you're watching this video anywhere except CalBanyan.com, you want to go there because right below this video, right there on CalBanyan.com, is additional text, links, graphics, stuff like that, that will make this podcast much more valuable to you. Today, we are going to cover grief, emotions, and hallucinations in AR. Is it really necessary? All right, before I get into that, let me tell you, we got an upcoming, let's see, NGH-approved Banyan Hypnosis Hypnotherapy Certification Super Course in October 1st through November 11th with the weekend off in the middle. It's the best way to become a one percenter. Come out to Tustin, California. And you know what? If you can't come all the way out here, we stream the event live over to the internet. You can sign up for it and get certified that way too. You get to practice just like everybody else. Your practice gets supervised just like everybody else. It is the way to go. If you can't be here, you can save a lot of money on hotel and all that kind of stuff. What else have I got here? Oh, you got to go to the NGH convention. Talked a lot about that in the last episode. Not going to get into it too much. 300 workshops, a gazillion good speakers, and of course, our Week of Power 5-path and 7-path self-hypnosis certification course will be conducted during the 4 days before and the 3 days after the convention. It's super great value. Go there, get the Week of Power and the NGH convention all in one trip. Let's see, is there anything else I want to talk about? Oh, if you can't do it live, then check out our 5-path 2.0. It's the latest version of our 5-path training for hypnotherapists. And of course, we have an entire certification set if you're interested in that too. Links right there. You can also go to hypnosis.org and learn to how to hypnotize for free right there and be able to get all that good stuff. All right, here I am. I'm ready to roll along answering your questions. Oh, all right. One more cup of coffee. It's really nice when I have Meredith or I have Elrond, because while they're talking, then I can have my sips of coffee or water or tea or whatever I'm drinking that day. And by the way, I said I'd talk a little bit more about this before I get into it. You know, one of the coolest ways, I remember Dr. Dwight Damon, president of the National Guild of Hypnotists, he says the best way to build your practice is take advantage of a certain part of your body. And it's the, you know, you got to use a part of your body, right? And he says space between your nose and your chin. You got to talk. And, you know, a lot of people, they're not so good at just bringing up the conversation with strangers. So if you look here on this website, there is a picture of some t-shirts, some cups, and things like that. And I call these conversation pieces, some of which you can wear. And right on there it says, you know, hypnosis works, ask me how. I answer questions about hypnosis. And there you are, as you're walking around, those people who are interested, they'll say, are you a hypnotist? And you can say, why, yes, I am. They go, what do? You can say, I help people when everything else has failed. And so you can just walk around. You can have a bumper sticker on your car. You could have something on your keychain. You could wear a hat. Just a gazillion different things you can do. And I got a bunch of them on that website. Just go over there. The way the website is set up right now, I believe it's on that side of the site. You'll see some pictures of like hats and t-shirts and stuff like that. Go there, check them out. And gosh, you get some at, you know, $20 or $25 for a shirt, something like that. And it can get you all kinds of leads. Heck, you got to wear clothes anyway. You might as well wear clothes that's going to make you some money. All right. Let's see. Question number one today. I have a client who says she has prolonged grief. Is hypnotherapy appropriate for this? All right. Now, this whole thing, you know, the wording of this may have to change depending on where you are working. You know, some places the word grief is protected and only psychologists can use it. So what we can also say is sadness. Now, because what is grief really? I mean, it's an emotion of sadness because of a loss, particularly of a loved one. And how long should it last? You know, it's pretty normal for people to be upset about the loss of a parent or a spouse or some kind of loved one like that for a long time. And they need to have that time to grieve and feel sad and, you know, cry and do these normal kinds of things. But if this is going on after, you know, 6 months or a year, then guess what? They've been sad for too long. And yes, hypnosis done right can be very, very effective with this. As I'm talking about this, it reminds me of a client that I came in, that came into my office once, and she had been referred by a psychologist, and she was diagnosed with having prolonged grief. Now, what I did, of course, I did 5-PATH with her, but what I did as part of the pre-hypnosis interview, I think it would be useful to kind of talk to you about here, and that is, you know, there she is. She's so sad. She's feeling so bad. I mean, she's got the dark cloud over her head and everything, and I look at her, and I say, who or what did you lose? And she looked at me like I had read her heart, that I knew what was going on inside of her. And she said, I lost my mother. And I said, first of all, I want you to know that I think that anyone that had gone through what you've gone through would be feeling exactly the same way. And she almost interrupted me and said, yes, but, you know, my counselor, my psychologist said that I have been feeling this too long. And I say, well, you know, I still would say that anyone that's been through exactly what you've been through would feel exactly this way. And so then I ask her, I say, tell me about your mom and your relationship with her. And she looks up and she thinks, well, of course, my mother was my mother. You know, she carried me for 9 months and raised me. And, you know, good times, bad times. Sometimes we got along, sometimes we didn't. But she was always my mom. And I said, okay, good. And I started thinking mentally, okay, well, there's one reason why she would be sad. She lost her mom. I said, what was your relationship with her otherwise? She goes, well, you know, after those rough teenage years, and when I got to be a grown up myself, I understood things better, and she became my friend. There's two things. And I thought, and she lost her friend. What else? Well, you know, my mom was the one person that could keep a secret for me. I could tell her anything, and we'd keep it just between the two of us. Confidant. She lost her confidant. And I say, is that it? And she said, no. She was also probably the very best babysitter anyone could ever have, because she loved my children as if they were her own, because she was the grandma. I said, okay, so now she lost what? A babysitter, the very best she could possibly have. I said, so is that it? And here she almost smiled. She said, you know, nobody could go shopping like me and Mom. She was my very best shopping partner I could ever have. It was so much fun shopping with Mom. So the fifth thing that she lost was, or the fifth persona that she lost was, this one person she could go have fun with and shopping, one of the things she loved the most. So I said to her, I says, you know, no wonder you're so sad. When you think about your mom because it's, you know, Mother's Day or something like that, you feel sad. When you need a friend to do things with or to talk to, your friend, your best friend is gone. When you have a secret that you just got to tell someone about, some confidant, she is gone also. When you need a babysitter to take care of your children, the very best babysitter you could ever have is gone. And when you are up for having a good time, doing one of the things you love most, your shopping partner is gone. So a very big part of your life left when you lost your mother. And there's a reason for this. And what we're going to do in the hypnotherapy, I told her, is, gosh, there's a reason inside of you why you haven't built these relationships outside of your relationship with your mom. We're going to go in and we're going to find out what cause you to just trust only your mom for these many different kinds of things that you need friends and relationships for in your life. And then we proceeded to do explain the secret language of feelings to her. We have a video about that and gave her a copy of the book so she could start understanding why we're going to do this emotionally based work. So, is hypnosis appropriate for sadness and grief? Yes. But please, if someone has just had a major loss in their life, you don't want to start trying to get rid of it in 2 weeks or even 2 months. Let them go through that process. I probably, if someone's had a major loss, I will want them to have had a natural grief period of time of at least 6 months. The client I had worked with had lost her mother 2 years before, and it was still having a profound effect on her life. No. So we did phase one, preparation, testing, convincing. I went right into doing some age regression and found out why she was insecure in making relationships outside of her relationship with her mother. We solved that, strengthened her so that she felt safe and secure in building those relationships outside of her relationship with her mother. We did phase three, which is forgiveness of others. And of course, the main culprit was it was her mother that kind of put the fear inside of her that it wasn't safe to trust people outside of the immediate family. And then we did phase four, which is forgiveness of self, because you know what? This lady was like 45 years old. I don't remember exactly. And she let that influence of her mother cause her to have these problems for so many years, and she had to accept some responsibility for that. And when she did that, then she felt some feelings of guilt and some anger at herself, which was then released through the forgiveness of self work. In this particular case, there was no significant secondary gain issues, so we did not need to go into phase five. But five path freed her from this problem, and she was then able to go ahead, start building other relationships. You see, sadness is good. This is something I talk about in The Secret Language of Feelings. All feelings are good when they're based in reality. She did have a very realistic, meaningful loss. She's supposed to feel sad when her mother's gone. That sadness is there to motivate her to do the sometimes difficult things she needs to do to fulfill that need of, you know, having people she could trust in her life, friendship, confidant, babysitters, shopping partners, and maybe even like a big sister or older person in her life that could be a parental figure. We all need them. People we can look up to or more experienced than ourselves. So that's what we would do. That's what we would do as five pathers. All right, let me move on to the next one and see what I've got here. Does the client need to hallucinate and believe she's reliving the past in order for age regression to be successful, or is it sufficient for the client to feel the emotions? All right. So, if you've been following me for any period of time, you know I'm a big, huge proponent of real age regression. Real age regression requires a deep level of hypnosis called somnambulism. And once they're in that level, they can hallucinate, which by this I mean relive an event that happened some time ago. And we will typically go back all the way to the first event and many significant events, not many, at least a few significant events which occurred after the initial sensitizing event where it started. So the question is, once again, does the client need to hallucinate and believe she's reliving the past in order for the age regression to be successful, or is it sufficient for the client to feel the emotions? Okay. This is kind of complicated. So I've written out some notes here. I'm going to go through these three things I wrote down. I'll probably add to it also. You can have some success without revivification. The NLP people and timeline therapy practitioners, they do that. They'll just have someone in the normal waking state go back on imaginary line or go back through some imaginary means to times earlier when they felt that way, just thinking it, just remembering it, okay? And you know what? That done right can give you some success. However, I think that real age regression with real revivification means to relive the event, is more powerful. Okay, the next thing I have down here is the best report of what's going on in the past, what they were thinking and what they were feeling can only be had when someone is experiencing true age regression, which is a hallucination. By that I mean, so you just have someone, you know, sit there in the chair, you're talking to them, you go, oh, tell me about an earlier time when you felt that way without hypnosis, or go back to an earlier time when this thing happened. It's not going to be as reliable a report than if you have someone in somnambulism and you do like the time tunnel technique, and let's say they have a fear of flying, and you say, where is that fear of flying happen in your body? Where does that fear happen? Now, they're somnambulistic. They're already in deep hypnosis. They say, oh, I feel it, let's say, in their chest. I say, good. Focus on that feeling in your chest and mentally go into that emotion and follow it back as if it were a tunnel, a time tunnel to the past. Now, when we do the time tunneling technique, we connect three things together. One is the mind, so that they are able to know what they were thinking back then. We also have the body sensations, because they're feeling it in their chest. And three, the emotions. They're locked together, mind, emotion, body, all connected, which gives you a reliable conduit to the past. Okay? So we go back to that earlier event. Let's say that they're 40 now and they go back to 20 and they're feeling that feeling just before they're about to get onto an airplane. We're going to ask those famous five questions. What's happening? What are you thinking? What are you feeling? How old are you? That's where we find out that they're 20 in this event. And then the emotion, if the emotion is familiar or new. Now, typically, these problems don't start when you're 20 years old, even though the client will tell you, oh, I've had this problem since I was 20 years old. They're almost always wrong about that. The initial sensitizing event almost always happens sometime before the age of 5, and most likely around 2 or 3 or younger. All right. So when we have them reliving the event at 20 years old in this event, we're going to say, what's happening? What are you thinking? What are you feeling? Is that feeling familiar or new? And how old are you? When they say, this feeling is familiar, which it will be because it almost always starts before then, we say, good. Where is that feeling in your body? 20. And 20 says, oh, it's in my chest. Good. Focus on that feeling. Mentally go into that feeling as if it was a tunnel to the past. Follow it all the way back to the first time you felt that way. And then they can follow it back, get to the early event, we'll repeat that process. And if you're not familiar with the time tunneling technique, it's on one of the earlier episodes. Actually, it's on 3 earlier episodes. I go on to it in a great amount of detail. Okay, we go back to the ISC. Maybe they're just 3 years old. Most clients in the normal waking state cannot remember anything that happened when they were 2 or 3 years old. So it's only through a true, real age regression with revivification that we're going to be able to get to that aspect of themselves that is 3 years old. And inside that aspect of themselves that is 3 years old, they know what's going on. They know what they're thinking, and they know what they're feeling, and they know how old they are, and they know if that feeling is familiar or new. And so if you just do remembering, or if you just have them feel the feeling as an adult, you cannot get to the cause of the problem. Also, just having someone go back to that earliest time when they felt that feeling, however intense that feeling was, small or large, but feeling it again is cathartic. It's a catharsis that is releasing. And as they release that emotion, then that emotion that's inside of them just dissipates. There's two main ways through age regression that we help the client with regard to the intensity of the emotion. One is just through this releasing of the emotion, just letting it out. If someone is sad, then we encourage them to cry in that event. The other is by doing the informed child technique, which is like a reality check. We're going to go to that earliest event and then check for any misperceptions that the client is having. A lot of times, vast majority of times with our clients, we'll take them back to a time when they were 3-4 years old. We'll find an event happens. They think something that's not based in reality and then have emotional response that's not based in reality. For example, mother's going off to work for the very first time and they're now 4 years old and mom goes to work and the child thinks, oh, I did something wrong, made mom want to leave me. Oh my gosh, you know, who's going to take care of me? You know, no one's going to feed me. And they have all these thoughts and it causes a fear inside. Okay. We can have then, of course, the adult aspect, go back and talk to the child and tell the child, mom's coming back, you're going to be fine, you get to grow up and do this informing child work, and we reduce or eliminate or neutralize that that false emotion through insight. Gosh. All right. So the question is, does the client need to hallucinate and believe she's reliving the past in order for age regression to be successful? Or is it sufficient for the client to just feel the emotions? Now, revivification can happen to varying degrees. And some people, they totally relive it as if it was the most realistic dream you've ever had. Other people, they just become aware of how old they are. They re-experience to some degree enough of the event so that they can get in touch with what they're thinking and what they're feeling and whether that feeling is familiar or new. That's the information we need. They need to revivify to that extent. Okay, they may not be aware of every single detail that's going on, and you don't need it. There are things that we can do to make the event more real. We can have them explain to us what's going on. We can have them describe things that they're doing. If they're eating, we can have them tell us about the taste. We can have them start activating the five senses. If they're doing something which involves touch, we can have them describe the touch. If they're doing something that has a particular smell or aroma, we can have them describe that. If they're doing something that has a sound, they can tell us what they're hearing. And as they start activating these five senses, the revivification becomes more and more realistic, more and more alive. But I typically won't spend the time to activate all the five senses. I just need to know what's happening, what are they thinking, what are they feeling, and if that feeling is familiar, new, and how old they are. So another interesting thing about this question, she says, is it sufficient for the client to feel the feelings or emotions? And if they're typically, if they're feeling the emotions and you've directed them into the past, they are in age regression, and if you use proper verbalization, like staying in present tense, ask them what they're thinking, what they're doing, then they will be in regression and in revivification. All right. Good. Let's see. I'm going to squeeze one more in here. Balancing the desire to help your with your ability to help. Sometimes you want to help people. For example, their English is not so good, but you wonder if you're going to be able to. From time to time, I'll have someone come into my office, and either because their language, English is not their first language, or maybe they're not the most insightful person, or maybe they're not really, really bright. But I think that with a person, it would be unfair not to try. Like I'm thinking, gosh, this person, you know, it's going to be so hard to work with because their English skills are not good, or they're not the brightest person, or they're not so insightful, or they're fearful. And I think, gosh, I really want to help this person, but I'm thinking this is going to be tough. Or it might not be successful. They just might not have the intellect, or they just might not have the English speaking ability. And in that case, but you want to help them. So on one ear, kind of betwixt in between. Now, if you have someone that it's a language problem, you've got to kind of talk to them. This is the solution. You've got to talk to them, and you've got to be honest with them. Now, I've never found a way to talk to someone about problems with intellectual capacity. I would probably just say, you know, I think we can do this. Your situation looks like it's going to be complicated. It may take more sessions than average. I want to be honest with the person and work out a solution with them. If the person has limited English skills, my first priority would be, who speaks this language that this potential client has that is a skilled hypnotherapist, and I'll just refer them out. But if that person, if there just isn't anyone around that they can help them, then I've got to just sit down with the client and say, you know, I'm noticing that as we're doing this interview part, that sometimes you don't understand what I'm saying, or I have to repeat things several times and explain things. And if we do proceed, that's going to cause it's going to cost you more money because it's going to take more sessions. You know, let's say for on average for a particular issue, it takes you 4 or 5 sessions. And you might say, you know, on average with someone who speaks English really well, this might be 4 or 5 sessions. But with you, you know, I anticipate that it's going to take 2, 3, 4 sessions, maybe more, to get through the work. Are you ready to make that kind of investment? And so it's really work it out with the client. Let's see. Yeah, that's the main thing, is if you see it, we as hypnotherapists, we're the kind of people who want to help people. But there's going to come situations where you go, I really want to help this person, but I don't know if I'm going to be able to. If you don't think you're going to be able to, you need to just tell them, gosh, I don't think I'm going to be able to help you because your English is not strong enough, or maybe it's something outside of your realm of training and qualifications. You just explain it to them. But if it looks like you think you can be successful, but it's going to take more sessions, just explain that to them. And work it out. You never want to mislead a client. You want to be as honest as you can with your clients and really help solve them. You want to be a good hypnofixitist. That's my new word. I like that word, hypnofixitist. I came up with that word because someone was saying, should I call myself a hypnotherapist or a consulting hypnotist or a hypnotist? I'm thinking about, let's just call ourselves hypnofixitists, and we can do hypnofixotherapy, and we can study hypnofixitology. Leave your comments below. Let me know what you think. All right. Now, next week, I'm hoping that we can have Meredith back. It's so much more fun to do these videos when I have Meredith or Elron along, and you know, you've seen the videos. It's a lot better. But in the meantime, please visit my websites, hypnosiscenter.com. All my training schedules are listed there. There's more stuff than you could ever read in one day as far as just free information, that kind of stuff. Go to hypnosis.org because there's also more information. Articles, our e-zine is there, and also I teach you how to do the quick induction, the Elman-Banyan induction, and like us on facebook.com/hypnosis etc. or hypnosis etc. It's probably right here. Hypnosis, facebook.com/hypnosis etc. Go there, like us, and you'll be in on the conversation that we have off of this website. That's it. Cal Banyan, signing off. This recording is the property of Cal Banyan and Cal Banyan's Banyan Publishing Incorporated. All rights reserved, for private use only, may not be duplicated without written permission.